This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Shahad Kutin. With me, Melissa Idris and Tan Chung Han with the top business stories of the day. Okay, what isn't in a decline is the sales growth for Facebook as well as user numbers. And this despite the Cambridge Analytica debacle that I think haunted Facebook. At least its share prices dropped quite significantly during that period, and they lost tens of billions of dollars in terms of market capitalization, right, for the company. So, but this seems to, are they turning the corner? Is this what we're seeing with these numbers?
Well, so the simple answer to that, Sharad, is that no, Facebook has not felt an immediate financial sting from the Cambridge Analytica debacle, is the word that you use. Okay. So there's early signs point to little financial impact of the Cambridge Analytica data leak. But let's take a look at the numbers. Let's boil it down specifically, right? First quarter revenue rose almost 50% to just under 12 billion ringgit. It beat the 11.4 billion ringgit average analyst projection.
Dollar, excuse me.
Did I say ringgit? Macam Facebook is Malaysian, right? I tell you. So yeah, that's dollars, of course. But what's also interesting is to take a look at daily users, taking a look at the ad revenue, because that is at the crux of it, the Facebook business model.
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, what's telling is that for their user base in North America, it has actually come back up. Now, in the fourth quarter of 2017, they saw their first ever decline. And now we've got the Cambridge Analytica debacle that erupted in the first quarter of this year, yet you've got this pickup in users, right? Now, they also mentioned that they highlighted or they informed those users whose data may have been compromised because of the Cambridge Analytica episode. I was one of them, thanks to probably one of my college mates who took
app. You
yeah,
were
I got,
one?
Yeah, I got a notification.
Wow, do you feel violated?
No, that's all right.
All right.
Well, you know, see, so this is the issue, right? So on the sales side, I can see why there will not be any disruption, because I mean, for sales and people doing marketing, this is great, right? The algorithm that Facebook has allows for targeted, ads that people in who want to sell products and services really want. They love that about it. It also goes to the dodgy guys, right? The dodgy guys who are selling the Elon Musk, you know, increase your brain power powder, whatever it is that they've
got. There's an Elon Musk powder?
There's an Elon Musk brain power something or other.
Okay.
Right, and it's dodgy, right? And those dodgy guys love Facebook. So you can see why they will continue to be with Facebook to the extent that Facebook does not exclude them from the process.
But right? I do think, okay, so we may not have seen the financial sting from the Cambridge Analytica issue, but the biggest problem is the foundation of the Facebook business model has really come under question recently. It doesn't appear to be an immediate risk, but there is a real threat that regulation or popular pressure could crimp what is essentially data-reliant business. Facebook thrives on what is surveillance capitalism. They are a data extractive company that they use for A, targeting online advertising, and B, to train their machine learning algorithms. So at the end of the day, what will that mean for a business like Facebook? Mark Zuckerberg can say he's going to hire all the people he wants to filter content to make sure there's ring fences in place, but at the end of the day, the business model is such. They're selling data.
Yeah, and at the same time, you know, while he has pledged to dedicate more headcount towards screening through and filtering the content that is put up on Facebook's platform, well, at least until AI really, really kicks in. You know, so that's going to put, there's talk that could put downward pressure on Facebook's profitability moving forward. Now, also, when it comes to users, now, although their users, their user base in North America has seen an uptick, but the number of daily users, the growth seems to be kind of moderating. So it only rose less than 13% in the first quarter of this year. Now, but you compare that to the 18% that they saw previously, you know, I think as recently as the middle of 2017, right? So there could be some tapering off there in terms of daily users.
So do you think that the more immediate worry, rather than the business model, which is a future worry. The more immediate worry would be that Facebook isn't as much of a draw as it once used to be.
Well, I mean, because they still have their other platforms, the WhatsApps, the Instagrams, right? So they're insulated. Well, I would think they'll be less exposed to those kind of risks, because if they move from Facebook to Instagram, well, that's fine by Zuckerberg.
Well, you know, but actually, the way the headlines read now, it's like Instagram has a Facebook problem. So now it becomes Instagram's problem to be saddled with Facebook. I mean, if you read some of those reports, because you're absolutely right, even those celebrities that said they were going to boycott or delete Facebook did not delete their Instagram.
Yeah.
You know, and the question is, what pressures on Instagram are there going to be to conform to the imperatives that drive Facebook and its back-end technology, especially in terms of sales?
Yeah, I don't know. I think, again, you know, Instagram is going to be, I think, the driver for growth for Facebook. I just want to correct myself a little bit. In the Congress hearing that Mark Zuckerberg attended, and one of the senators accused him of selling data, and he says Facebook does not sell data. I'd like to correct myself. Facebook does not sell data. However, we'd like to think that Facebook rents the data out.
Yeah, that's one way of putting it.
One way of putting it.
The data, yeah, and
semantics,
the algorithm.
Semantics.
Right? So they're selling a system, right? Okay, let's take a look at something closer to home, or as close as Facebook. Something you can't put into you can't put Facebook into your tank, but you can put petrol into your tank.
You know how they say data is the new oil? Well, this is actually oil is the new oil.
Okay, well, because when you look at the front page of the Star this morning, it says latest fuel prices on the top banner. It says that for April 26th to May 2nd, RON 97, RON 95 and diesel remain unchanged. And that's fairly, that might be gone past as unremarkable, except for the rise in oil prices globally of crude. Why isn't it affecting prices now?
Yeah, so this is, Sharad, the fifth consecutive week since the last price fluctuation for all fuel grades and types. I think the last time we saw a hike was about a 10 cent hike across the board mid-March. It's also the third consecutive week since the dissolution of Parliament, right? So all in all, the question really is, as you've put it very succinctly, crude oil prices being at the highest point since 2015, how come prices at the pump haven't changed?
Right. One would think, and I think there's a chatter out there, that because it's election season, because any hike in prices at the pump is so politicized that, you know, there would be some incentive for them to manage or put the emphasis on the manage when it comes to manage a float mechanism. Right now, this is not something new, because even if you go back to the third, fourth quarter of last year, you had the Treasury Secretary, Tan Sri Irwan Seriga, who has actually said that, you know, the government still does subsidize petrol prices, or fuel prices, to the tune of hundreds of millions of ringgit per month.
He wasn't specific though, right?
Okay, no.
So the idea is that the prices at the pump is part of this managed float system based on the automatic pricing mechanism. But there's also another layer, which is the government still subsidizes a little bit. We don't know how much, we don't know what kind of percentage or ratio that is. But the interesting thing is, it must be that subsidy portion has increased given that crude oil prices have gone up. The problem is we don't know the breakdown, right? We can't possibly tell.
And this goes back to our discussions earlier about the Elections Commission, all those institutions and mechanisms that we need to institutionalize, right? And the question is whether these institutions and mechanisms have an integrity that makes them separate from the politics of the day. So if Malaysians feel that they can trust a mechanism, they can trust an institution, then the fluctuations don't matter, right? Because it will say we've all bought into the game. But if you think it's being politicized, then you have a problem. Because then you say, well, if you can manipulate it one way, why aren't you manipulating it the other way?
I think it's also, we don't know how the mechanics work, how it works really under the boot. How exactly, if you can put it simply, does the managed float system work?
Okay, well, so in terms of calculating the fuel price, and this is out there, you can check it out. You know, ministers have shared this, you know, even good old Paul Tan, the famous auto blogger here in Malaysia,
yeah.
Right? You know, he's got it on his website as well. So it includes everything from alpha to operational costs to the margins for oil companies, then margins for petrol dealers, and then also it accounts for some sales tax or fuel subsidies. But at the base of it all, the cost, the base cost, is based on mean of Platts Singapore, or that's MOPS. Now, that number is not widely known unless if you're a client and you pay millions of dollars to subscribe to MOPS, right? So that's where the ambiguity comes. But the formula is out there. Now, going back to what you mentioned just now, Shira, about the integrity of the mechanism, well, I dare assume that I think motorists, you know, folks, you're listening to this right now, you wouldn't mind some compromise to this mechanism. Why? Because it translates into lower fuel prices. Now, if you want to say that we're going to protect the integrity of retail fuel prices, right, no matter the cost, then that means, all right, Brent, oil prices go up, global oil prices go up, you pay more at the
petrol
pump.
Petrol prices go up too.
Well, I think it's fair. I don't drive a car.
Well, easy for you to say, buddy.
But then we can't have our cake. We can't have our cake.
Exactly. Exactly.
We either have, you know, institutions with integrity or we don't. You know, and the question is, should our self-interest be determining the way these institutions mm-hmm. and mechanisms operate? Big questions for us. Let's move on to the story of e-wallets. I know, Han, you've chastised some of us in the studio for not moving into that space, you know, the sophisticated fintech space of still being sort of laden with bundles of cash in our pockets.
I have to ask, though, do you still use checks, Sharad?
Very rarely.
Very good. So that's a good step.
In fact, I sometimes forget. Well, I use it so...
You get one star.
Okay. Well, you know, and I know why, and it's very inconvenient. I try to do everything in terms of cash transfers. I do electronically, online, but I also use cash when it's necessary.
All right, so this is coming off the back of CIMB saying now they're offering free online transfers conducted on its online banking platform as well as mobile apps. If you've done online banking before, you'll know that there's a charge for interbank gyro, there's a charge for the instant interbank fund transfer. I think it's about 11 cents for the gyro and 53 cents uh-huh. for the interbank fund transfer. So now that's going to be scrapped, and I think all this in line with kind of Bank Negara's push for a cashless society. So it really boggles the mind. Why would you need to charge this kind of processing fee at this point in time to do something online, right?
Well, there are still costs associated with online banking transactions, but the cost for the digital payments is far lower than, you know, say, using
checks.
cash or checks. Yeah. Now, just to give you some figures, okay, and speaking about subsidies, right, guess what? When you actually process a check, that fee that's being charged to you is actually subsidized because, according to Bank Negara, the real fee for processing a check is about 3 to 4 ringgit per check.
Wow, really?
Yeah, all right. So, but then you only charge, I think, like 1 ringgit. Or
I think it was about 2.
Yeah, something along those lines. Now, also, when it comes to cash, guess what? When you actually use cash, it takes a toll on the economy. Then the figure that's attached to it, according to studies done in Europe, is 1 percentage point of the Malaysian economy, or of the economy, right? So when you use cash, checks, it comes at a higher cost compared to digital payments.
Sorry, just to correct myself, it's 1 ringgit. So it was fee was increased from 50 cents to 1 ringgit, and gradually will be increased after that. So yeah, I do think it's great that this, you know, this is the direction that we're moving forward. I think Bank Negara has been very successful in implementing more of this kind of cashless society, more about digital payments. I noticed in their previous in last month they had their annual report, and it showed that the number of e-payment transactions per capita has more than doubled. The other thing I thought was really interesting is, apart from this waiving of the fee, I really hope that in the future we'll see no more minimum transactions. I hate that. What is the minimum transaction for using credit card or debit cards, right?
Okay, so that perhaps goes back to what retailers claim will be cost to them if you use, and that used to be the excuse for charging us or having
the
a
transaction
minimum
fee.
That's right.
Yeah.
So those kinds of things. But I come back to a very interesting element about having electronic payments. Like, since you use the LRT today, it's very hard to top up your card at the machine. So you have to, and wherever you top up, you still have to pay like 50 cents for the top up. So you put 10 ringgit in, you actually only get 9 ringgit and 50 cents worth of credit.
You're talking about touch and go.
Yeah, it's the MyRapid. But I'm not quite sure why, and
that's a touch and go issue. So when I spoke to the head of touch and go on the Breakfast Grill, I think that they have retailers who sign up with them, and that is a processing fee that certain retailers charge. But you could also go to any kind of petrol station or
Like Caring Pharmacy apparently doesn't charge.
So they have tie-ups.
But I don't understand why it should be at all. In fact, why shouldn't it be available online? Couldn't we just top out our Touch and Go card online?
Next steps.
Touch and Go also recently tried to revolutionize itself and tried to do the whole digital wallet thing. If you guys saw it, it went viral. Yeah, it was not smooth, okay, without getting into the clunky details. That's why I'm a big fan of using mobile wallets.
Okay, can you use your mobile wallet on the LRT?
Not right now.
You don't know. You're just making that up. You take a car. You drive everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Bluffer. Okay, we're coming up to the top of the hour. We'll be back with the opening numbers on the stock market and more analysis. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.